You're listening to The Takeaway. I'm Melissa Harris-Perry. On Tuesday, the John D. and Catherine T. MacArthur Foundation announced this year's 25 recipients of the so-called Genius Grants. This year's cohort is an incredibly diverse group of people. 12 women, 13 men, 11 of the fellows are Black, 6 Latino, and 1 Asian American. And that diversity also cuts across ability, geography, and so much more. Like in previous years, the work of this year's fellows reflects a breathtaking array of scientific, scholarly, and cultural contributions. Taylor Perrone is a geomorphologist working at MIT, trying to understand the mechanisms that create landforms on Earth. Jacqueline Stewart is expanding the public imagination through her groundbreaking archival work on Black film. And Monica Munoz-Martinez is a public historian excavating the history of racial violence along the Texas-Mexico border. Listen, there's a reason that MacArthur Fellows are colloquially referred to as geniuses. And we're joined now by one of this year's MacArthur Fellows. Desmond Mead is a civil rights activist and executive director of the Florida Rights Restoration Coalition and author of the new book, Let My People Vote. Desmond, it's so great to have you here.
Melissa, I am thrilled to be with you today. You just don't know. You know, I got to say this, you know, this recognition started with you many years ago when you named me a foot soldier.
Okay, don't make me cry. We got live radio to do. Listen, MacArthur grants are often called genius grants, and I'm wondering how it feels for you to be called a genius.
This is so surreal, you know, and I hear you talk about the diversity, but another distinction of this year's honorees were that two of us, myself and Reginald Dwayne Betts, were formerly incarcerated people, right? And I think it's so amazing that, you know, people like me and Reggie are getting the recognition and the platform to really elevate, you know, the work of people who are closest to the pain.
You know, I'm thinking about that and this way that if you say genius just out in the world, folks often think of like a scientist, right? And sometimes they really are, right? Or a mathematician, right? Kind of sitting alone in their office doing work and, you know, people who had straight A's in school and followed all the right paths and had all the right outcomes. But one of the things I love about this class of fellows is genius is so collaborative. Your genius is, in fact, in organizing, in moving people, in changing systems.
Wow. You know, I'm still trying to process this, Melissa. You know, just to say genius next to my name, I mean, well, I'm still in awe. You know, I remember back in the days, I used to tell people that when I first got my law degree, I told them I had to do a doctorate degree, a doctor in law and a doctor of the streets. You know, and I just, you know, this is like surreal to me. I'm like I said, I'm still processing this, but I am extremely grateful because this is an amazing opportunity to really elevate the work that's being done by formerly incarcerated people throughout this country.
Tell me about some of the restrictions that so many formerly incarcerated people continue to face, the things that you are barred from accessing even after having served time.
Let me tell you, I could use myself, you know, and I write about it a lot in my book. But, you know, even though I was able to overcome so many obstacles, because back in August of 2005, I stood in front of railroad tracks waiting on a train to come so I can jump in front of it. You know, recently released from prison, homeless, addicted to drugs. I didn't see any light at the end of the tunnel. But the train didn't come, and I was able to overcome all these obstacles to eventually graduate law school and obtain a Juris Doctorate degree. But because I had a felony conviction, even to this day, I still cannot practice law in the state of Florida because I can't even sit for the Florida bar. And believe it or not, after all the success that I've had, I still don't even own a home because a lot of HOAs have provisions written within their bylaws that would restrict me from even owning or renting a house, you know, in the state of Florida. And so there are so many collateral consequences that people like me face. And then to me, I think the biggest one is being prevented from participating in democracy. But at least we were able to overcome that barrier by successfully passing Amendment 4.
Now, tell me what Amendment 4, remind folks what Amendment 4 does and the effect that it may have in coming years.
Yes. So Amendment 4 basically was a constitutional amendment in Florida that restored voting rights to people with felony convictions after they had completed their sentence. And our efforts had an immediate impact on 1.4 million people in Florida. And so Florida being such a critical state in federal elections or presidential elections, right, this amendment have the opportunity to significantly shift the political landscape, not only in Florida, but in this country. You know, for many years, people say as Florida goes, so does the rest of the country. And, you know, with the exception of last year, you know, that's been true. And so to be able to re-enfranchise a significant number of people in a state in which presidential elections are typically decided by, you know, 100,000 votes, sometimes less than that, was very significant.
Earlier in the show, we were talking about R. Kelly, who is often seen as, and I think rightly, as a musical genius. And we've talked a little bit about how that framework of being great can also cover over and paper over and allow people to turn away from bad actions and actions that hurt others. So I'm wondering how you think about that responsibility of carrying something like activist or civil rights activist or genius, and how that reflects in on the responsibility we have that goes along with a title like that.
Well, you know, I fully embrace whatever comes with being named a genius and that responsibility, especially as a person, like I said, where I've come from being homeless, addicted to drugs, and contemplating suicide. And so I took on that responsibility long before MacArthur awarded me this honor, because I believe that, you know, that I was chosen, that God chose me to do a work. And that work was to really, number one, just show people there are so many folks in our society who are facing obstacles and who, you know, feeling like there's no light at the end of the tunnel. And what I do with my body of work and who I am as an individual is a message to them that no matter what obstacles are in front of them, that they could overcome those obstacles and have an impact in their community. In addition to that, and equally as important, you know, this body of work that I'm engaged in also shows people who may not have walked a mile in my shoe that they cannot automatically foreclose on a drug addict. They can't automatically foreclose on the returning citizen or formerly incarcerated individuals, and that they could see what happens when we're giving, people like me are given second chances, knowing that we have the potential to be a great asset to our communities. And so this was something that I took on many years before getting this recognition. And so I fully embrace the responsibility that comes with being named a genius today.
As you're talking about that opportunity to use your talents, your gifts, your abilities, your second, you know, law degree or your second PhD, the one that you earn in these much more tough circumstances, I think you and I have talked about my older brother before. He's 9 years older than me, and I hadn't seen him in about I have not seen him face to face or touched his hand in more than 20 years, and we recently lost a family member, and I did not know that he'd been released, and he showed up at the graveside, and I saw my brother for the first time in 20 years, the first time that we've all been together, all the siblings. And you know, whenever I see my brother, I think, God, he's so tall, he's good looking, he's funny, he's smart. But I know that's not what so many employers see. I know that's not what so many landlords see. What's the work that gets you off the track? The track in front of that train. How do you see yourself?
So let me tell you. So this, it is so amazing that you shared that story again about your brother. Because here's the deal. You know, I remember just a couple of years ago, I was one of the 100 most influential people with Time Magazine, right? And I remember telling one of the executives there that they missed the mark because they put The Rock on the cover of Time. Right. And I told them that they should have put me on the cover because, you know, I think folks need to know that you don't have to be a movie star, a celebrity, an athlete, or a billionaire or politician to have an impact on this world, right? That if they could see that a drug addict, a convicted person convicted of multiple felonies can, and homeless could overcome those obstacles and have an impact, not only in this community, but on the world itself, that they can do it, that we all have what it takes to actually do something great while we're here on this planet. But the other part of that is also showing, and speaking to what you're saying, is that that employer, right, today, that employer who is hesitant to hire a person with a criminal past, right, could look at me and say, man, would I be denying Desmond a job working for my establishment? Or the landlord, you know, that is hesitant, or these cities or municipalities and police departments that have these crime-free housing policies that are so inherently racist and discriminatory, right? Would they now rethink that because they see someone who their policies would say, you're not allowed to live here. You're not allowed to work here. You're not allowed to go to school here. And you're not even allowed to vote, to have your voice heard. Right. And so this moment, I think, is a moment to really elevate that platform to help start shifting some narratives. Right. Because what you saw in your brother is what everybody should see in your brother first. And that is his humanity. Right. Not the mistake that he made, but his humanity. And when we're able to connect with each other along the lines of humanity, we treat each other more humanely. And we understand that some lives are not more valuable than others, that we're all deserving of being treated with dignity and respect.
Have you thought about what you're going to do with the money?
You know, at the end of the day, you know, I think where my blessing comes from is when I take the blessings that God give me and use it to help others. I've done it before in the past with our fines and fees fund, where we're helping people pay off fines and fees so they don't have to choose between putting food on their table or voting. And I will continue to do so because God always blesses me when I put people first.
Desmond Mead is a civil rights activist and executive director of the Florida Rights Restoration Coalition. He's also author of the new book, Let My People Vote, and a certified genius. Desmond, thank you for joining us.
Thank you so much, Melissa. Have a great day.
I'm David Remnick, host of the New Yorker Radio Hour. There's nothing like finding a story you can really sink into that lets you tune out the noise and focus on what matters. In print or here on the podcast, The New Yorker brings you thoughtfulness and depth and even humor that you can't find anywhere else. So please join me every week for The New Yorker Radio Hour, wherever you listen to podcasts.